Hey there, Jeff Hoyt here on Voice of Vashon at KVSHLP Vashon. This is a Voice of Vashon special where I commandeer the radio every now and again to have interesting conversations with interesting people. And today I've got two very good friends. You've heard me talk to them on the radio many, many times before. Bruce Morser and Bob Horsley are here. Hey, guys.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
How are we doing?
Nice to be commandeered.
Nice to be back.
Yeah. Bruce and Bob, of course, did the Great Divide Trail, and you heard all about it right here on Voice of Vashon. Every week, they called in from the trail, and we had conversations about all the adventures that they had. And when did you guys get finished with that ride? When did it end?
For me, it ended October 11th.
And for Bob?
For me, it ended, I think it was September the 19th or something like that.
Something like that.
Well, coming up at Vashon Center for the Arts on April 12th at 7 o'clock will be a talk. What do they call it? Talks on the Rock?
Talk on the Rock
with Bruce and Bob talking about the trip. The whole experience, paintings out in the lobby.
Yeah. I would even emphasize that the door actually opens at 6. We will appear on stage at 7 and start telling our thing. But the paintings are all lined up, all in two long lines, both sides of a temporary center wall we're making. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be 70 paintings. And the door opens at 6 for people to come and check the paintings out because they relate directly to what you'll be hearing about.
Yeah,
this is really similar to what we did back in 2017 for our East to West trip.
Yeah.
We did a show there.
Well, this event is $20 admission for general admission, $18 for VCA members, and youth under 18 are free. You can get your tickets at VashonCenterForTheArts.org. And I wanted to get you guys in beforehand, not only to have a conversation to help promote this event, but just to kind of, we haven't really talked about the ride in a while. And I would think that this ride is, kind of the gift that keeps on giving in that the process of processing it continues.
You make a good point by sort of envisioning our last conversation.
Yeah.
First of all, I know Bob's thinking this too. Thank you, Jeff, for doing these radio shows.
Oh, absolutely.
We had our doubts. I remember, 6 years ago, we had our doubts like, is this going to make sense to do this from the road? And you do a marvelous job. So our very strong thanks.
It's what I do.
It has helped us sort of process what we've experienced too, I think.
Have you gone back and listened to the conversation?
I have, yes.
So take us where we left, like you said, where we left off. You and Bob were sitting here. Mm-hmm. I think you were in this room.
Right, and it was your final day.
I
believe.
I literally finished the thing, got to it. We'll resolve this at the event. It's you don't really finish this ride. This ride is never finished. But I got to what a lot of people think of as the finish, and I'm sitting there waiting for my niece to come and pick me up. And that got a little scrambled up. So I had plenty of time to wait and think, and that's when our last phone call happened.
Yeah.
So Bob is on the mend at that point. You're sitting here helping us digest what the whole thing is, and I am basically a piece of bacon in a little teeny chair at the border.
Yeah, and now months have gone by. You finished this ride in October, and Bob, again, you in September, but I've wondered, what have you learned about this trip that hadn't yet landed on you when you finished it as time has gone on since?
I can go ahead, Bob. You got a thought.
Well, that's a pretty deep question. It's
That's what I get paid the no bucks.
I've been processing this all along. I think it was an experience that I'm just going to hold on to, obviously forever. But I think the memories that I have of the trip and the experiences that we have, they do continue to come up in my mind almost on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And trying to process how to remember those events and how to process them has been kind of a tricky thing because there was so much that happened and we experienced so much and how we split in the end was a bit of an odd thing too as far as me processing the whole thing. It's been a head full, honestly.
Yeah, I'll bet it has.
Really has. Yeah.
I think you're wise to ask this question in that the trip for both of us, I know that I can't really speak for Bob, but I know this because we've certainly covered this with each other, changed markedly during the trip. So expectations around what this trip was going to be is kind of like, wow, this will be a wild experience. And I'm sure it'll be a lot harder than the cross country and those sorts of things. So we're kind of expecting that as we shove off from the Canada border. But by the time we get to Silverthorne, Colorado, which is where Bob and I had to part, already this thing had changed markedly. And by the time I get to Antelope Wells, the Mexico border, all of a sudden I had a very strange relationship with time. I had a very strange relationship with space. That's kind of where the ride ended, because my ride to end the ride was there. So I had to stop. And I didn't want to go any further. I had the feeling, I've got this. I've done this. I know what this experience is like. And it was unbelievably joyful and really much harder than I expected. Now, all these months later, like Bob said, the first 2 months, 3 months back, every time I close my eyes, I'm on the road again. Every night, I'd try to go to bed, and this tape would be running in my head. All these, the miles, literally the gravel and rocks going underneath, but then also all these people that we met, and all night long, I'd just kind of be visiting this. And now, instead of like worried about, is this something I can actually accomplish? And the joys, the unbelievable joys of doing it, but then the hardships of it. Now it comes into this, like, I move slower now. Things are much more real to me now. I've got back into the deep end of the pool in terms of life's challenges of, get this done, get that done, but not in the same way. Do you feel this kind of moving slower?
And I think part of that, for me to process this, I think the best way for me to encapsulate it is both of these trips that we've taken have sort of thrown us into a situation where we were living by the moment. And regardless of the planning that we did, and regardless of what we wanted to do, the trip had other ideas. I mean, as soon as we thought we had a game plan, we were doing something would come up. It would completely change. As soon as we were having great luck, bad luck would happen. And as soon as bad luck would happen, great luck would happen. And I think that continued throughout the trip to a point where we were completely living in the moment.
Yeah.
And I think you do that for a long period of time, and it's going to change your attitude about how you just approach everything.
And you kind of like living in the moment.
Yeah.
And it has its own, it's pretty hard to steer a life by living in the moment, but you realize, I would want to spend more time here. And the things that, you spend time with all these unusual people, not just your fellow riders. There are a lot of riders that you're always riding with somebody kind of thing, and you meet people on the trail that become incredible buddies. But then all these people whose lives you temporarily ride through, and you realize that, almost everyone we met had a phone, but they were not living a cell phone life. Mm. And back here now, I realize the extent that I'm back to sort of living a cell phone life like everybody else I know, and that I'm aware of this very other life out there, and I don't live the cell phone life I used to. It's markedly less. And I'm trying to find this balance. Uh-huh. You realize you're kind of like, how do you play the days ahead? And it's very much influenced by what we did on that trip.
I remember when you got back, you were talking about being in kind of a haze or a fog that lasted a while, even though you had this long list of things you had to do. And
months.
The return to normalcy was not instantaneous.
Yeah.
Whereas I think on the cross-country trip, you kind of got back into the regular way of doing things a little quicker, it seemed like to me, just as remembering it and having it in the rearview mirror as your friend listening and to you guys talk about it and process it afterwards. This one was more profound.
Well, the first trip was, we were more connected to the road to civilization,
the world,
to the world. Uh-huh. This trip, we were really disconnected a good portion of the time.
Yeah.
And we were on our own.
When I am, I teach drawing. I've done this for years and years and years as kind of a sidelight. And when I teach drawing, students are amazed. I've learned to tell this to students that when I'm actually drawing well, when I'm on my game, I would not be able to operate a car. I would not be safe with a chainsaw.
Yeah.
I would not be those kinds of things. Uh-huh. I'm not able to do that because I think to what Bob is saying, I'm so completely witnessing what is in front of me as I'm drawing and turning off all the usual chatter that's there. And you said it well, Bob, that we're just doing this again and again. And the point where that became quite rich. And so I had that. It's not like I was worn out. It was more like I was in that zone of complete awareness, which I realize people work really hard to get there in life. And we worked hard too in a different way. But that's very much what was going on. It wasn't like being worn out. It was like being the little tiny things of the daily thing. Like, look, you put the key in the car and it turns
amazing.
On. Yeah, it's that kind of thing. Was very big.
Yeah.
We're visiting with Bruce Morser and Bob Horsley about their ride along the Great Divide Trail, which stretches from the Canadian border down to the Mexican border. I guess it actually goes further up into Canada.
It does.
You guys did Mexico or Canada to Mexico. And there were two things that stuck with me from the conversations we had. And I just thought I'd paint a couple of pictures.
Oh, good.
to get kind of your impressions now, months later. The first is something that I found really interesting about how you described what you were seeing, Bob, because we all live in the Pacific Northwest. We're used to spectacular scenery. You go across the North Cascades Highway. You take the Sea to Sky Highway from Vancouver up to Whistler. You take a ferry through the San Juan Islands. It's all freaking beautiful. We're used to it. And I have been on spectacular drives in parts of the world where they say, this is one of the greatest drives in the world. And I'm going along going, it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Seen it before, because I live in the Pacific Northwest. So I was really struck by when you guys were on this trail, and I was saying, so what's it like? And Bob, you tried to articulate what you were seeing, and you just could not find words to articulate the beauty and the awe of and the wonder of what you were seeing. And I just thought that in itself was profound. You live here, where beauty is all around us all the time, and you're out there and you're going, oh my God.
You want me to try it again?
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me hold the ball for you, Bob.
And, you know, this is one of those things that I've processed a little bit since the trip, too. But I think when we typically see the scenes in the Northwest, we're either seeing it from inside a car or on some arterial or in a setting where there's more other people or cars or something that represents more civilization, whatever. We were a good portion of the time, I would say, 70% of the time, we were in areas where there was not even barbed wire. I mean, it was trail and Bruce and I and the scenery. And the trail wasn't much even to look at. We were just out there. And that surprised me, just about the remoteness of what our daily experiences were.
Yeah. It's interesting that the coming back, and both Bob and I have been sorting photographs and sorting our paintings and getting them matted up. I just matted my last one today and getting ready for this show. And one of the things that's sort of a challenge is you realize the things that absolutely stunned us were these scenes that do not photograph well and they do not paint well. They are just, it's too big. Photographs just don't have any connection to what you actually see. And the photographs we ended up picking for this trip, we just dutifully show some of these things that were just absolute stunners to us. But we also showed some things that were more intimate because that's kind of what people can relate to in photographs. And it's that kind of power. So when I was, one of the days that most hit me was called Union Pass. You remember Union Pass? Mm-hmm. And I told you, I think on the radio, that I had this powerful, overwhelming sensation that it reminded me very much, to the point where I was back there, to a dream I regularly had when I was a kid. And we all have flying dreams. And I would have these flying dreams that I'd be heading west. And I'd be going over all this unbelievably spectacular scenery. And I remember as a kid waking up and just being sad, really depressed, sad. That was just a dream. I'll never see that again. And then getting the Union Pass and realizing, my God, that's it. That's the place. That's where I was. And this sense of like really blistering hope is like, I can go back there. Mm-hmm. I know where this is. Mm-hmm. I could get back there in 4 or 5 days and a drive and some riding. And I could be back there. And that kind of thing and it doesn't translate. We both had videos of it and we're looking at them and neither one of them does justice. Yeah. It just isn't a videoable thing. So
because a picture has a frame. And
I don't really have any good photos from that day, really.
I know. I think plus we're basically kind of, jaw swinging in the wind and those kinds of things. Yeah.
Okay, here's the other image that really stuck with me. And I think about this and I think, okay, this might have been a peak experience for both of you, this moment. And I think about peak experiences a lot because Cindy and I have been all over the world and we've had many peak experiences. And sometimes we don't realize what it was until we're looking back on it. Mm-hmm. But over time, we've gotten better at being able to recognize, this is one of those moments. This is one of those moments. Enjoy it. Take it in. Chew on it. Completely experience it. But when you look at highlights of the Great Divide Trail, like 10 top, I've gone online, 10 top views in the Great Divide Trail, this place isn't on the list. But it's the desert that you rode through in the pre-dawn hours through Wyoming, I believe it was.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is it like the Great Basin?
Yeah, it's called the Red Desert or the Great Basin.
Yeah. And the way you describe that, especially in that it was dark and you're in flat and then the sun comes up, I was thinking, that would qualify.
Yeah, that was that probably was one of the peak experiences of the trip. Yeah.
It was interesting that of the videos that we got back, the videos work. The Red Desert. It looks great. Yeah. I've shown my family members, obviously, and they're all like, whoa, what is that? And the thought that Bob and I think reacted to it differently or experienced it in different ways, but what really knocked me out was we're riding with headlamps for a number of hours because we start riding at 3 a.m. So we've got a lot of time and we're bumping along this trail and you can't see that much. And slowly, very slowly, you begin to sense the forms around you. And for all the world, it looked to me like, and you get this phenomena when you're out in the ocean alone in a boat as dawn, pre-dawn, you get a sense of the earth doming. It's like you are at a high spot and you know it's flat, but you have a sense like everything domes away from you. And then when this little red, tiny, thin red line arrives, and you're so happy to have this thing arrive, and it arrives in the horizon, and you get an increased sense of this doming, and then all of a sudden, I got this overwhelming sense that's like, the earth is rotating. We're rotating towards the sun. Mm-hmm. And a sense of this giant, profoundly huge thing of like, we're riding towards the sun and we're rotating towards the sun. And it was kind of, thank goodness it was sort of dark because it was kind of a tears in the eyes experience.
Mm-hmm. To me, the riding in the dark was the peak experience. just the riding in the dark. I never will forget there were, how many of us were there? 1, 2, 3, 6. Six of us. And we all had our separate tents set up at different places around this creek. And we had agreed the night before to meet and leave at 3:00 in the morning. So to me, it was remarkable. Everybody, everybody's got their own routine. You gotta eat, you gotta pack up your tent, you gotta pack your bike up. There's a lot to do,
Yes.
And we all met at 3:00 and everybody was ready to go.
Yeah.
And that was just remarkable to me. It's like, whoa, look at this.
and plunging into the abyss.
Yeah.
And it's like you can't see anything.
Yeah.
You get your headlamp is
I
good
think I
for,
fell over immediately when I start because we had this really steep climb out on some rocky terrain and it was a little dicey because because just, you know, a headlamp, that's all you had.
It is pretty, it was pretty dreamlike you know, it was, you lost your bearings very quickly. I recall sort of wondering, where are we going? Are we going in the right direction? Are we doing this or that? And realizing that I could look up, and the Milky Way is profound at that point. It's just just profound, one of the brightest ones I've ever seen. And you could tell which direction you were going in because of the angle of the Milky Way over where you were riding. And it became kind of this thing to regularly look up and sort of realize, oh, I guess we're heading a little further south now. We're heading a little further east now. It was really powerful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about King Harold, whom I believe is going to be... set up by video link?
Or? I believe so.
First comment on King Harold. This is, a number of people have asked me, it's like, you actually met the king?
No.
Not that King Harold.
He should be the king.
That must be a prerequisite if you're named Harold in Norway.
Yeah. Harold.
Harold. You go by King Harold.
Yeah.
That he wanted... everyone to understand, this is nickname. This is, I'm not the king. And King Harold is a guy we meet on the very first day, right?
The very first day in Eureka, we met him on the sidewalk. He was drinking tea.
20 miles in, doing his blog and his computer and drinking tea. And then we lost track of him that day. But the very next day, we're into our first mountain pass. And Whitefish Pass. Mm-hmm. And we're both like, whoa, this is tough. And King Harold and two other people show up. And we immediately just start riding with them and then rode with them on and off for a long time.
Yeah. And I was thinking that because he became, he was an important part of this whole experience. And and it's something you
got my biscuits out of the fire.
You could have never expected this. This is not something, you know, we're going to, on this ride, we're going to meet this guy from Norway who's going to be important to us. But I was wondering if his importance in this ride has only increased as you have this ride in the rearview mirror and you realize all the things that you experienced. Just how key, how important was it to have this guy appear and become a part of your experience?
Well, I think it was more important for Bruce after I left, because he really, because you needed somebody to ride with. It was really, really handy to have that. So
at that point, I mean, when Bob and I had to split up, I mean, I was sort of thinking, do I really want to ride this alone? Yeah. And one of my decisions, I mean, it made sense. Both of us talked about it right in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And we realized, if I'm ever going to do this, now's the time to do this. Do this now. And at that point, I was thinking, you know, every once in a while, you get email or text connection, not really email, but text connection, and that I could text ahead to Harold, who was a couple days ahead. And he let me know, I got a hold of him that night, and he said, I'll wait for you in Salida. So it's like, okay, great. So he was going to be there, and then he does. For me, he becomes terribly important. Mm-hmm. He helps me get through Giardia, and then about a week later or 2 weeks later, I helped him get through Giardia. Yeah. And in the end, Harold and I did not get to ride the last couple days together, but we both got to the end of the ride, and he's important. He's taken on this continued importance. I have an update on Harold.
Where is he now?
This
is great. You'll love this.
The King Harold. I've had a couple of conversations with him. You know, FaceTime kinds of conversations with him, because he just FaceTimes out of the middle of nowhere. And there's lots going on in his life. When he got home, his daughter and wife met him at the airport, and his daughter announced her pregnancy at the airport. So things like that were really cool.
Yeah.
And so then I get the next little blip from Harold, and he's like, yeah, Bruce, I am in the Atlas Mountains south
Morocco?
Of Morocco. Yeah.
Oh, man.
And so he has
bicycling.
He has photographs there.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's Harold, same bike, same bags, same panniers, same elbows out, chugging along, but in deep sand. And it's like, that cannot be good. But yes, so Harold's there. And
So that's where he'll be calling from?
I don't know. I think he'll be back home by then.
Yeah.
But we have yet to make the final connection. But Jesse, who's the amazing tech at VCA, has told me, yes, we can do this. We can make this happen.
The amazing thing about Harold is he was so upbeat and optimistic the entire, regardless of what the conditions were and how we were feeling at the time. It was always, this is good. This is good.
Yeah, y'all good. I have a great piece of video that I'm not going to talk about that proves this.
Yeah.
It's the last piece of film I have of Harold, and it just totally, it captures his essence.
Yeah.
He could go in. I mean, we had this weird experience in a bar in Atlantic City that was not a happy place. And he ends up going through that very same town about 3 hours after we did. And we left it thinking, get us out of here. This place is, they're mean people here. And Harold goes there and he comes back and says, yeah, they're good people. I got to know them.
There was one person in the back of the bar that he met that he was expounding on.
No one else could talk to this guy, but Harold had no problem.
He would find good things.
He's a good man.
In everything, yeah.
Bruce and Bob Ride the Divide is a talk on the rock at Vashon Center for the Arts. It happens April 12th at 7 o'clock. Tickets are $20 general admission, $18 for VCA members. Youth under 18 are free. And get your tickets at VashonCenterForTheArts.org. Looking forward to it, guys.
Paintings are available to look at 6.
Great.
Yeah, 6
That's
o'clock.
Sort of, it's worth seeing
early.
The paintings before
show up
you,
for cocktail right. hour.
Yeah. Yep.
Check out the paintings and enjoy Bruce and Bob Ride the Divide at 7 o'clock on April 12th. Bruce, Bob?
Great. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks
for
Bob.
Being here.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Right. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Okay.